Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The Rams are the NFC champions.
Here it comes.
Snap back to Garoppolo. Pocket crumbling. He spins out. He flips it forward. It's tipped. It's intercepted. It's intercepted. It's intercepted. With 1:09 remaining at SoFi Stadium, the Rams are staying home to play in Super Bowl 56. What did we just witness?
A lot of change was about to happen for me and my family. You know, that was probably my biggest thought at the moment, was excitement to come and play with this group of players. Happy that I'm here and happy to be a part of it.
I am ecstatic for Matthew Stafford. Ecstatic. Stafford finally gets to play in a Super Bowl.
What he's done, he's elevated everybody around him. If you don't root for this guy, something's wrong with you.
You think about some of the other guys that they brought in to enhance this team, to do what they felt like they needed to do to make this a Super Bowl team, a Super Bowl winner. Not just a team that would win the NFC like it did 4 years ago, but a team that could seal the deal, if you will.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
A blast from the past, going back a couple of years. But yeah, that was a great storyline. And then the Rams had a year in which they fell off the map, only to come back and make the playoffs last season once guys got healthy. And now there's no more Aaron Donald. So the Rams definitely have a different look on defense. Will they make the playoffs from the NFC West again? The NFC is usually, at least the last few years, usually the weaker conference between the two. And once again, the AFC is stacked. That means that generally we'll have more competitiveness from top to bottom AFC, where the NFC is more top heavy. Does that change in 2024? Only one way to find out. We're getting closer to the start of the regular season. Right now in the NFC, a lot of eyeballs on the Cowboys and the CeeDee Lamb situation, which may not be a sense of urgency for Jerry Jones, but is it for fans? I know a lot of Cowboys fans would feel better if he was actually in camp or signed, sealed, and delivered, even if he's not in camp or on the field. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence at A-Law Radio on Twix, also on our Facebook page. Good to connect with you. We're pleased now to welcome John Machota. Hasn't been on the show in a while, but covers the Cowboys for The Athletic. Let's play a little game of good, bad, and ugly, John, just to start out. What is the good right now for the Cowboys in preseason?
Oh, I'd say the good is that Dak Prescott, Micah Parsons will not participate at all in preseason. So that means that they'll be healthy for the start of the regular season, or at least that's the goal. I'd say that's the biggest part, that, you know, they're not going to play a ton of their starters in these preseason games. So, you know, it's been a lot of, let's see what they have in Trey Lance. Let's see if Mazi Smith, last year's first round pick, has taken a step to where you can count on him as a starter. I think that those are the biggest things, because let's be honest, this is a Cowboys team that didn't do much in the offseason to improve the roster, and they've lost some key pieces. And so it's tough to look across this roster and think that it's going to be a better team than it's been the last 3 years.
Where's the bad from Cowboys preseason?
I'd say the bad was probably just that they gave up a fourth round pick for Trey Lance, and he's been okay, but he's just been inconsistent. I don't think that in his preseason action against the Rams, it looked very similar to what we've seen in the first 3 weeks of training camp practices, where there's some good, but then there's a lot of inconsistent play that he doesn't look like he's going to beat out Cooper Rush for the backup job. And then so it's, are they really going to carry three quarterbacks? And it's possible, And I don't even think that it's been bad. It's kind of been so-so. I'd say if you're going to go certainly bad, it's the fact that they lost Sam Williams early in camp to a knee injury that's going to have him out for the season. And you can just tell that they're missing him. They needed a little extra juice of the pass rush after losing Dorrance Armstrong in free agency. They don't have Dante Fowler now. And then Micah Parsons is playing a little bit more traditional linebacker. They probably need to add another veteran edge rusher, but it's a team that hasn't done much in the offseason to improve the roster, so there's not a lot of faith that that's going to happen.
Why is that? Why no improvements?
I think this is a big make-or-break year for several members of this Cowboys team, and I think that's because Jerry Jones is particularly frustrated with how good last season's team was, but how ugly, disappointing, and embarrassing they played in their only playoff game. And to have home field, to be the two seed, to kind of back into that, being a team that was really the NFL's best home team the previous 2 years, and to get embarrassed like that at home in their playoff game, a wild card game against that Packers team, that doesn't sit well with Jerry. And I think so when he jokes and makes these comments about being all in, fans take it as, oh, well, you're going to spend. No, his all in is that if things don't go where he wants them to go, which is obviously a deep playoff run, then you're looking at a 2025 Cowboys team that might not have Dak Prescott, would have a completely new coaching staff, and then there's other pieces that also could be different. And then I think that's where you'd see a potential major change next offseason. I'm not saying that that's a great plan, but it seems like it's on the table.
Is this kind of a sink or swim attitude? You go out there, this group, you do it, and then we'll decide whether or not you all stay around or stick together following this season?
I believe so. And when you deal with Jerry Jones, you also have to always factor in how successful he's been as a businessman outside of the NFL, outside of sports. And I think there's a part of Jerry that believes that the best can be brought out of somebody when there's pressure on them, when, hey, I don't have a contract beyond this year, maybe that pressure will lead to them playing their best, and that might happen, or coaching their best, and that might happen. But there's also a chance in those situations where things just completely fall apart, a team sees that a coaching staff's in their final year of their contract, and then all of a sudden it ends up being a disaster of a season. I don't think that will happen, but it's got to be on the table when you go into a season like that. And so that's what will make this season interesting. I don't know how this would be a better team than they've been the last, you know, few years, but it could be a more interesting regular season than they've had the last 3 years.
We're glad to have John Machota with us from Oxnard, California, where the Cowboys are in the midst of their preseason. And he covers the Cowboys how long now, John?
Since 2011. So, yeah, the years are adding up here.
And now with The Athletic, and it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So what's the ugly about the preseason? Is it what's going on with CeeDee Lamb?
Yeah, it has to be, just because it looks ugly to have, you know, Jerry Jones talk about how he doesn't have a sense of urgency to get the contract done. CeeDee responds to that comment with an LOL comment. Obviously, he wants a new deal. He wants to be with his teammates getting ready for the season. And I do think ultimately there will be something that gets done, but it does look ugly right now. Heck, last year at this time, it kind of looked like it was going to get ugly with Zach Martin, and they got something done. And then in 2019, it was certainly getting ugly with Ezekiel Elliott, and they got something done, and he got a new deal. I mean, in 2020, you know, Dak had to play out that final year, and then he ends up having that severe ankle injury, but then he ends up still getting the contract that he got. Although things can look ugly at one moment, once that contract's signed, then everybody's happy and everyone can be friends again. But as of right now, it looks like that situation is kind of ugly, and it's a little bit of a head scratcher just because of the fact that once that Justin Jefferson deal got done, I mean, it kind of sets up the parameters of where CD would fall in that group. And so it seems like it would be an easy contract to get done, but clearly it's not. But that hasn't changed anything in terms of my belief that CeeDee Lamb will be on the field with a new contract week one against the Cleveland Browns.
Do you buy what Jerry Jones said to clarify or to backpedal Sunday before the game?
With Jerry, you always got to read a little bit between the lines. Like I say, I've been covering the team since 2011. There's nobody I've transcribed or heard talk or talked to more than Jerry Jones. And so what he does is great for our jobs, and it's that he gives you oftentimes a lengthy answer where there's a little bit of the answer that can be used for this side of the argument, and there's a little bit of the answer that can be used for that side, and then it keeps everybody talking. When you read between the lines, I think what Jerry Jones means is that he's fine with CeeDee Lamb not being at training camp because he knows how good of a player CeeDee Lamb is. He's seen him produce every year improved the last 4 years, and in the 4 years he's been in the league with Dak Prescott. And so he doesn't need to see him out at training camp. He doesn't need him potentially suffering a freak injury and being out for the season at training camp. And this allows Dak to get more reps with a number three receiver like Jalen Tolbert, a number four or five receiver like Jalen Brooks, guys that are going to have bigger roles this year. They've been seeing more action because CeeDee Lamb's not out here. I think that's what he means more, and I think that that will be proven to be the case as long as that contract gets done sometime in the next few weeks.
Someone else who I've been hoping that we're going to see more of, how is Trayvon Diggs?
He's certainly making progress to the point where he's been able to do some drills, but you can tell that they're just easing him back in slowly. They practiced last week against the Rams, and he didn't get any work there. But I thought he would, because a couple days before that, he did 7-on-7 work and was moving well, and he looked like the Trayvon Diggs of old. So I don't think he's suffered any setbacks or anything like that. I think it's just that, almost like I said with the CeeDee Lamb thing, they don't need to see a ton from him out there to where he could potentially suffer a setback. They just need him to be out there week one, and that remains the case that they believe will be that, you know, he'll be out there with Jerron Bland, Jordan Lewis, and a kid they drafted in Caitlin Carson. I mean, they've got a real solid top four at corner is one of the strengths of the team. So they'll be up there, maybe not leading the league in takeaways, but I think they'll, again, be one of the better teams in the league at doing that.
He was definitely missed last season. Well, you mentioned Dak and Micah Parsons, and those are the other two names that are kind of put out there when talking about Cowboys business and potential deals that need to get done. If there's not a great sense of urgency about CD being in camp and ending that holdout, how would you gauge the sense of urgency when it comes to Dak and Micah?
Well, Micah is, he's been open about he's fine with waiting. There's not really been any talks there. Micah would love to put out another even bigger season. I mean, I think right now, if let's say he was in the final year of his deal, you're talking about being the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. So right now that's Justin Jefferson. So, you know, $35 million a year, we'll say, would be the ballpark. But Micah can go out and put out, you know, defensive player of the year season, have 18 sacks and play the best ball. And he would love to have that going into a contract year. Maybe that gets him $40 million a year, because as long as he stays healthy, the path that he's on, when he gets that next contract, I'm confident he's going to be the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. And so because of that, he's been just fine with waiting. And with Dak, they're not that as close as they are with CD. And so because of that, I think there's a decent chance that Dak plays out the final year of this deal and they see where it goes. And if they are to have that, you know, deep playoff run, I think Jerry will be happy to give Dak whatever, $60 million a year, whatever that number will be to reset the quarterback market. Whereas maybe right now he's not willing to do that, because I think if he was, I think it would be done right now. And I do think it comes down to Jerry Jones and where he feels comfortable on this. And there's plenty of room there to argue, well, you might be a lot worse without Dak Prescott than with him, and you're willing to risk that.
Wow.
And it seems like he is.
Even after last year in which he had an MVP-type season, that's the crux of it, is he could do it during the regular season, but we didn't see that against the Packers?
I think that there are people that believe that, and heck, maybe even Jerry Jones believes that. He would never say that publicly. He's always, you know, been a big-time supporter of Dak, so I haven't heard him say that, but you know, actions speak louder than words, and the actions are that this contract still isn't done yet, and you see all these other, you know, top quarterbacks getting new contracts. So what else would be the missing piece? I find it hard to believe you can find a better person, better leader, better team guy. Clearly, like you said, to be the runner-up for MVP during the regular season, there's nothing else he has to show during the regular season. So the only thing that's missing from his resume is to make that run in January. You've seen a guy like Matthew Stafford do it after he didn't really have any playoff success in Detroit, and the first year he does it with the Rams. So maybe Dak has that year this year for the Cowboys, and then it's just kind of a moot point, and they get a new contract done. But if you don't have it done, there's also the chance that Dak's like, oh, okay, you didn't want to sign me? All right. And then has a big year and goes, no, I'll go to free agency. And heck, maybe get $65 million. Who knows? Because that's the thing. There are some Cowboys fans that, you know, would be fine with them moving on from Dak. But the thing I always say to those folks is he is going to get paid by somebody. And, you know, and someone's going to give him a lot of money. There's not that many good franchise quarterbacks out there. That's why the market keeps going up.
Right.
If there were 40 of these guys, the market wouldn't be going up. But because there's like 10 to maybe 15, and the next guy up is just going to be the next guy that resets it. And if you don't want him on your team, just be careful, because there's no guarantee that you find another Dak Prescott or Tony Romo as the successor to him.
John Machota is with us from Cowboys training camp. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. How likely is it, John, that all three of these guys remain with the Cowboys?
I would still say it's, I'll say 60% chance, maybe 65, but I wouldn't go any higher than that because I believe the Cowboys thought at least one of these guys would be willing to take somewhat of a team-friendly deal. When I say that, I don't mean like $10 million under market, but maybe a few million, you know? And they, none of them clearly are. They all want to be paid accordingly. And they were all on the field against the Packers, and obviously that didn't turn out well, but they've all shown during the regular season that they're all very elite players. And so all of them, whether they the Cowboys pay them or some other team does, those guys are all going to get paid at the top of the market. There's something with the Cowboys that the front office, particularly Jerry and Steven, they believe with the low, you know, no state, you know, income tax, it's a pretty low cost of living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the spotlight that you're in with the Cowboys and the endorsements that come with it. I think that they're always hopeful that at least a couple of these guys would be willing to take a somewhat team-friendly deal, and they're finding out that that's not the case at all. These guys all want to reset the market and be paid at the top, and it's going to be tough, but I really feel like if they would have had a deep playoff run last year, and let's say they get to the NFC Championship game, I think Dak and CD are both, their contracts are done right now. I really do believe that there's a part of Jerry Jones that wants to see more, and that's why he's willing to risk this, and that's why it's his version of this season being all in.
How would you compare expectations then from the fan base, the excitement, the anticipation for this season versus, say, 12 months ago?
Yeah, not even close. No. This is probably as low as the fan base has been on the team since I've covered the team. And there's definitely been some training camps going in where, heck, in 2014, Jerry talked about it being an uphill battle that season, which was so uncharacteristic for Jerry to say during a pre-training camp, you know, press conference. But it ended up being a really good year in 2014. And then in 2016, it had a similar feel after Romo went down, but then Dak stepped up. And so there is a little bit with the Cowboys when the expectations are low that they've, you know, kind of exceeded them. And so maybe that potentially happens this year, but that Packers game, that left a mark on the base, and it should. It wasn't just a loss at home. It had been the previous 2 years was, you know, just can't get over the hump against the Niners. Well, you didn't even get a chance to square up against the Niners. I mean, you weren't even close. You were down 32 midway in the fourth quarter. I mean, that Cowboys team, I'm sorry, like, it's easy to make fun of the Cowboys for fans that don't like them because it's been 28 years, a Super Bowl. I get all that, but that Cowboys team was talented. They've won 12 games each of the last 3 years for a reason. You don't just happen to do that in the league of parity the NFL is. That was a good team. And to be down like that bad in the fourth quarter, there's not a team in the NFL. I don't care. Patrick Mahomes on his best day shouldn't have the Chiefs up 32 in the fourth quarter against that Cowboys team. And so that's definitely sticking with a big chunk of the fan base, no question.
What would you say were the key factors and why that went so horribly wrong?
It's a great question. And I haven't been able to get any great answers from anybody. Nobody seems to have an answer for why it went that poorly. Because here's the thing, like, if you could just point to one side of the ball or just a couple of players having a bad game, that would be one thing. I mean, you can really look back on the way that season ended and you can point blame at literally everybody from the front office to the coaching staff to all the players except for probably Brandon Aubrey, the kicker, who just had an incredible rookie year in the NFL. But outside of him, you can point the blame at everyone. And it has been kind of interesting this year with the Cowboys since that game happened. Like, I don't get the sense from the fan base that there's as much blame on, let's say, like Dak or CD or Micah or other players on the team as much as it's a Jerry Jones thing. And that's because it's been 28 years and he's the one constant of, well, what's been the issue? What's been holding them back? He's the only one that's really been around during this entire Super Bowl, NFC Championship game drought. So he gets the brunt of the blame for it, and deservedly so, but he also put a pretty good team out there and he wasn't on the field against that Packers team. So there's plenty of blame to go around to everybody, but there's no definitive reason why that game happened the way that it did. And it was the type of just pummeling that it was. I mean, nobody's really had the answers for that.
It's interesting that you say that because I hear the same from my fan base, which is much more diverse, but the audience seems to believe that this now falls at the feet of Jerry, some Mike McCarthy, some coaching staff still, but not blaming the players, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, no question. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it fascinates me because originally from Detroit, so I grew up a Lions fan. And so if you told me the Lions, like, finally got over the hump, made the playoffs, and got blown out in their first game, it's just so easy to go with, well, I mean, they're not used to playing in games like this. You know, that's such a big game. The Cowboys, like, every week, no matter they win or lose, it is such a major storyline during the regular season. So it's like, I just can't buy the whole, like, yeah, they just were nervous. They were just not ready for the moment. That's why they've lost these playoff games. Like, I find that hard to believe. And then on the Jerry side of it, like, it's just tough for me to put all the blame on him because, again, he obviously is a GM, and as the owner of the team, they put together a good enough team to win 12 games 3 years in a row. I mean, that is so difficult to do. So it's hard to sit there and say that he hasn't given them enough talent. And so it just kind of comes back to the players of that something has to happen where they get over the hump. And I don't know how that happens or what's missing for them. Because there's just been so many different ways that these seasons have ended over the last 28 years that it just leaves you sitting there just thinking, like, even no matter how good things could be going, like, let's say the Cowboys go into the playoffs with a one seed and 14 wins. You're still going to sit there and go, you got to turn on this Cowboys playoff game whenever they play because this could be an epic collapse because that's what they've shown you.
John Machota is with us from Oxnard, where the Cowboys are one game into their preseason and not as much buzz as even a year ago, despite the CD Lamb contract situation. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So before I let you go then, John, we know about the CD contract, and of course, we just talked about some of the ways where, yeah, that loss has damaged kind of the hope for the fan base. But on the field, what are the major question marks moving forward?
I'd say the biggest ones are probably at running back and probably defensive tackle. And that's just because they haven't done really much to upgrade the running back position. They lose Tony Pollard in the offseason. And then also, I mean, your running game depends greatly on your offensive line, and you lose Tyron Smith and Tyler Biadasz, their center, and you replace them with some younger guys. And so, you know, there could be some issues with the run game early, and then stopping the run has been not good enough for the Cowboys the last few years, you know, even as the defense has been one of the better ones in the league. They haven't had the type of defensive tackle play that you really need from good teams. And so when you go into the offseason and not only do you not add any defensive tackles, but you lose one of your best ones in Jonathan Hankins, it kind of leaves you scratching your head of, well, how are you going to get better at this position? So a lot of that hope, you know, kind of falls on the shoulders of Mike Zimmer and bringing in a different defensive scheme this year. But those are the two areas where it seems kind of basic and plain that, well, can you run the ball and can you stop the run? But that really is the thing for this Cowboys team. Every other area, you can see them lighting up on the scoreboard passing the football, especially with CD coming back and Jake Ferguson, Brandon Cooks, Jalen Tolbert. Like, they have weapons in the passing game. And defensively, they'll take the ball away. They'll sack the quarterback. They'll do things like that. But it's, can they stop the run when other teams are, you know, they're going to test them in those areas. And I don't think they've done enough to make you think that they've answered those questions.
They lose Dan Quinn, obviously, to the Commanders. It's his second run as head coach, and you covered him for a couple years there with the Cowboys. How prepared do you think he is to have a different result with his second team?
Oh, yeah, there's no question he's prepared. I mean, you know, I think just how he was such a big part of their defense, the way it turned around from 2020 to 2021. Now, obviously, a lot of that coincides with them drafting Micah Parsons as well, but, I mean, he's a big part of help putting in Micah in positions also to be successful. But I don't think there's any question that he's prepared for this opportunity because he's had interest from teams in the past that you just knew that Dan was going to get another chance to be a head coach and deservedly so. So it's going to be fascinating to see just kind of how things work with Washington, because for so much of the last decade plus, you know, it hasn't been the rivalry that, you know, it had been, you know, whatever, in the 80s and beyond. And so it makes me wonder, like, does that come back? Does Jaden Daniels take them to another level? And is this back to being a rivalry again? And so that will be fascinating to watch. But yet, I don't think that there's any question that he was ready to get another chance to be a head coach. But it just, can he do it with Washington? It's obviously been an organization that's been down for a while now. So I'm sure, let's put it this way. I think that if you hooked him up to the lie detector test, he probably would have rather had the Seattle job, but he wanted another head coaching job, and so this is the one that he got. And yeah, I do think he'll make the most of it.
We'll see them twice a year, of course, inside the NFC East. All right, you can find John Machota at JonMachota. Covers the Cowboys over a decade now. Be interesting to see if this preseason is a foreshadowing of what's to come this year. We'll find out. You can get his stuff in The Athletic because it's just beginning. John, it's great to have you on the show again. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
I know I went a little long with John, but lots of interesting questions about this season with the Dallas Cowboys. And also, I think it's fascinating that fans maybe are conditioned now to not get as excited. And John firmly believes that there is a much more dampened sense of anticipation for the start of the Cowboys season. Not that they can't exceed expectations, but right now fan bases are lowering theirs, which is not generally a good sign. What do you think? I'd love to hear from you. 855-212-4227 at A Law Radio. And then on our Facebook page, do you think the Cowboys will have a successful season, more so than last year? Will they win the NFC East? Will they capitalize on what is a weaker conference?
Get me some oxygen.
Seriously, doesn't seem as though fans believe that to be the case about 2024. Glad to have you with us. Hope you survived your Monday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Once I turn on the radio, I'm ready to roll, ready to roll.
Here on After Hours, we like you as much as you like us.
I've never been on the radio, so this is new to me, but I always listen to you when I get off work.
Cool. Oh, my goodness. You're so on right now. You're so on. You stay on.
Thank you.
Don't stop what you're doing.
Hey.
Hi.
You are a superhero of the sports world. You have a very inspiring show.
Thank you for taking my call. I love your show, and you have a great night.
Thanks, Taylor. I appreciate you tuning in Houston, home of my mama.
Hello, Amy. I just wanted to say, in my humble opinion, you're one of the best to ever do it.
Thanks. So positive and happy, and it makes my life happier.
Well, I appreciate it. I try.
Feel like a heart to get
is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Call me old school, but hey, I'm a 90s baby. In my 80s Mercedes. I'm a 90s baby. In my 80s Mercedes.
I definitely did not have a Mercedes as my first car. The first three cars that I drove were all hand-me-downs, all Nissan Sentras, all without air condition and vinyl seats and built like tin cans. So whoever has a Mercedes as her first car is living large, high on the hog, if you will. Though I have no idea where that came from. I can only think hog as in Harley, as in living high up on the Harley, but I don't actually know that to be sure. It's not my department. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Thanks for hanging out with us. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Extensive update on the Cowboys with a little bit of Jerry Jones and Micah Parsons and Dak Prescott and, wow, even Dan Quinn mixed in, so a lot there. But
get me some oxygen.
Love that conversation with John, who, yes, has had more than a decade to try to interpret what Jerry has to say. And what he's come up with is there's always some for and against, some pro and some con in his extended statements. I tend to agree with him. There will be a deal that gets done, and I can't imagine that CeeDee Lamb even misses 1 week of the season. Now, will it take him maybe a little bit to ramp up and be ready? Sure. But not because he needs oxygen or because he's out of shape, but because he is, I'm sure, working out. But it's a little bit different to be in football shape and some of the contact. But better that he plays not a snap or goes through not a practice in preseason than to have an injury. So I understand that perspective as well. So that's one contract dispute in the NFL. Another one is Brandon Ayuk. Here we are a week later after he's been given the options of Browns or Patriots. The Steelers were in the mix as well. And still nothing. Still holding in without a contract from the San Francisco 49ers. The team, the front office, Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, they still hope to re-sign him and retain him as a Niner. Why not? He's coming off a career year, more than 1,300 receiving yards last season. He and Brock Purdy have developed a great rapport. But at this point, nothing's happened. Now, what some of the insiders slash analysts will tell you is that the longer this drags on, the more likely it is that he does not get traded, but he ends up remaining with the Niners. And the closer we get to the start of the regular season, which is 3 weeks away now, 3 weeks from Thursday, which is crazy. So Tuesday is August 13th. The season kicks off 3 weeks from Thursday, August 15th. Just kind of the way the month is set up. And then the fact that Labor Day is so early in September, it's September 2nd. And the season now, although it could change if they end up going to 18 games, the season now kicks off the Thursday after Labor Day. So September 5th is the beginning of this regular season, 200-something games. There's still a ways to go. And what we've seen is that these contract disputes, even if they do drag into the early stages of the season, tend to get settled. Think Chris Jones last year for the eventual two-time defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs. And he was holding in as well. He was with his team when he could be. He even paid for a suite at Arrowhead Stadium for their season opener. That's how much he wanted the guys to know he was with them. So it wasn't acrimonious. Same thing with Brandon. What we heard last week from Jennifer Lee Chan, our Niners insider, is that he's personable, he's happy, he's attending meetings, he's talking to people, hanging out with his teammates when he can. He's just not practicing or going through any type of contact without a contract. But he's not in a bad mood. Think Jonathan Taylor last year. What did he miss, a month? I'll have to go back, but I think he missed the first month of games. Now, he wasn't entirely healthy, so there's that as well. It took him a while to ramp up because he was still getting healthy from an injury the previous season. So maybe a little bit different there. But yeah, these contracts do tend to get done. John even mentioned Zach Martin.
I have a question for you.
Are you raising your hand?
Yes.
Because there's someone else in here that I might call on before you?
Perhaps, yes, unfortunately. That's how it went in school. Do you think Hassan Reddick will get done with the Jets at any time soon?
That's another good one. A great example. And yes, the holdout is a tool that these athletes can use. It's, you know what it is? It's a high-priced game of chicken. That's what it is. Who blinks first? Who swerves first? I don't think that with the players, now Brandon Ayuk, a different story because the team said, all right, then go find yourself a new deal. Almost like they called his bluff, Manny, and he's still a Niner. He could be a Brown if that's what he wanted and the money's there and they're willing to sign him to a new deal that would pay him handsomely, but he's not taking it. And there are other factors. Number one, the Browns play in the toughest division in football. Number two, the AFC is a much more challenging road, at least based on recent past, than is the NFC if you want to get to the Super Bowl. Not to mention, he's already got a great rapport with the guys on the Niners offense. So I wonder if that was what the Niners decided to do. Hey, we're just going to call your bluff, man. If you're going to leave, I guess you're going to leave. And we'll get something in return if we can. Not if we can, but we'll get something in return. As for Hassan Reddick, I think that if the Jets are serious about this, and I'm with them, I wouldn't trade him. Why would you trade him? Heck no, you're under contract. You can play here or not play at all. Now, I do think teams mean that. Why would we let you go to one of our competitors? especially if you're offering up a draft pick. That doesn't help me in 2024. If I'm the New York Jets, I'm absolutely taking a hard line stance. So Hassan Reddick, I guess you could say it was an ugly turn. I heard some people describing it that way, but honestly, I think it's just a negotiating ploy. It's a tactic. It happens a lot. So he ends up requesting a trade. The Jets right away with a statement. We have informed Hassan that we will not trade him, that he is expected to be here with his teammates, and that he will continue to be fined per the CBA if he does not report.
It's totally fine.
Since the trade discussions back in March, we have been clear, direct, and consistent with our position. Our focus will remain on the guys we have here as we prepare for the regular season. Now, he's missed 3 weeks, $50,000 fine per day. To me, that is cutting off your nose to spite your face. $50,000 per day. So now the holdouts cost him nearly $2 million. I get it. He's not been a Jet for a long period of time. Maybe he doesn't have a ton of loyalty there. But you know what? The Jets are the pick of a lot of people. Again, analysts, insiders, fans who believe that with Aaron Rodgers healthy, this is a playoff team. And not just a playoff team. But a team that could challenge the Chiefs. I know, I didn't say it, but I've heard it. And so if you're Hassan Reddick, do you really want to miss out on that? Not to mention the money. But he has not been with them the entire offseason, including mandatory minicamp. And right now, the Jets are doubling down. No, we won't trade you. And until you get your rear end in camp, we're not negotiating either. All right. They feel like they have the high ground, if you will. They've got the enviable position. So I'm thinking in all of these cases, Hassan, Brandon Ayuk specifically, they will end up with their teams because why would you forfeit all that money? At some point, you got to tuck your tail between your legs and say, okay, I lost this round. I'll go out there, I'll play my ass off, I'll crush it, and then you'll realize I'm worth all the money I'm asking for. But no, if a player demands a trade, that was a combination word there, a trader. It's kind of trader and player and trade.
What was the word you said yesterday?
I don't know.
Oh, you combined two words yesterday. Now I have to go back into the archives and embarrass you. Continue.
No, you don't. It was Steph Currier. It was Curry and Warrior. And last week it was brutal and painful. It's really a nightly thing with me. I have an entire catalog, a whole dictionary, if you will, of words that I have created by combining parts of others, like celebrity marriages. And they don't last long either. 855-212-4227. How do you feel about the holdouts or just Dak Prescott? I think fascinating what we heard from John Mashoda about Dak and why he doesn't have a new deal yet. Not that he's complaining, but he doesn't have one yet. Thanks for hanging out with us at A-Law Radio or our Facebook page. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Peter Schwartz.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The thing that hurts me the most is that I have to watch the NBA Finals, and they have world champion on their head. World champion of what? The United States? Don't get me wrong. I love the U.S. at times. But that ain't the world. That is not the world. We are the world. We have almost every country out here fighting, thriving, putting on their flag to show that they are represented. There ain't no flags in the NBA.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
Well, by now, you know that has incited a bit of a social media riot. Noah Lyles scoffing at the idea that the NBA champion or the NFL champion is allowed to claim the title of world champion. Well, if you hadn't seen it, USA Basketball tried to troll him after capturing the gold medal in Paris on Twix. Now, this, to be fair, this is not Steph or LeBron or KD, although he probably would have been happy to do it. KD is a bit of a troll himself. But it was the USA Basketball account, likely run by an employee or an intern, and with a photo of the Americans on the top step of the podium about to receive their Olympic gold medals. The caption, "Are we the world champs now?"
World champion of what?
But underneath it, you know how readers can add context on Twix? The readers added, "No, you're Olympic champions, not world champions." And then reminded USA Basketball that Noah Lyles actually has a half dozen world championships at the World Championships. He did win the Olympic gold medal in a photo finish. Remember, that happened live on TV last Sunday or a week ago Sunday. And so he was able to, I guess, get the last word in for a while. But now that Tyreek Hill has entered the building, if you will, he's decided he's going to troll Noah and reminding people that he only won bronze in the 200 meters when he tested positive for COVID.
Noah Lyles can't say nothing after what just happened to him. You know what I'm saying? They didn't want to come out and pretend like he's sick. I feel like that's like horseradish. So for him to be, like, do that and say that we're not world champions of like our sport, says like, come on, bro. Like, just speak on what you know about. You know what I'm saying? And that's track.
Would you like to race him when he gets home?
I will beat Noah Lyles.
You think so?
I will beat Noah Lyles.
Like by a lot?
No, I wouldn't beat him by a lot, but I will beat Noah Lyles.
I'd like to see that happen.
I would like to see that happen myself. It's just another day on the track for Noah Lyles. I would like to see it myself. There's a lot more to it than just running fast. You got to be able to.
Champion of what?
Break out of the starting gate. You got to be able to maintain. Not that Tyreek isn't fast, but there's technique to it. It's not just about starting and finishing. It's not just about accelerating. So let's put a poll up. This would be fun. Who would you pick, or who would you put money on? Who would you place your bets for in a race between Noah Lyles and Tyreek Hill? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
World champion of what?